Welcome to Memorial Road. My name's Phil Brookman, and in John 14, Jesus said those words on the banner, "Believe in me." And this fall, that's what we've been talking about. We've been talking about the nature of belief and the complexity of belief and what it means to be a people of faith. And I've been really encouraged, to be honest. So many of you have, on the back end of sermons, told me just really interesting stories about conversations that you've had with family members or friends. In fact, there's been lots of them. One of our teenagers came up to me last Wednesday and specifically told me about this particular group that was talking to her in the past about issues of faith, and she didn't really know what to say. But because of the last few weeks, she's felt like she's had more to offer in that conversation. So I've just been really encouraged. A lot of you have shared great stories with me on this particular series. And speaking of faith, arguably, at least one of the main contributors to increased faith in the world the last 5-6 years has been the TV series, The Chosen. So it's estimated that 280 million people have watched at least one episode of The Chosen, and based on some surveys that the producers and creators of the show have done, they think at least a third of that 280 million are not believers. So there's a lot of people in the world coming to know Jesus or an introduction to the Bible through this really incredible series. And I know many of you are fans of The Chosen. So you might already know this, but Dallas Jenkins, the creator and director of The Chosen, is going to be here in Edmond in just a few weeks, and I'm really excited about that. Oklahoma Christian is having him on campus, and so I just wanted to let you know about that in case you want to come to the event. I plan on being there, and so hopefully you can come out as well and support that really cool event here in just a few weeks. So this week for the sermon, in fact, the next 2 weeks, it's going to be, I would call it faith adjacent, the topic where we are talking about something that's related to faith, but it's not necessarily like the last few weeks of science and meaning and faith and doubt. Today, I'd like to reflect a little bit about AI. So have you had your AI aha moment yet, where something happens and your eyes get really big and you think, how did it do that? It's amazing. I've had quite a few. One happened 3 weeks ago. I go to Walmart. The brake light is out in my car, and so I go to get a new bulb. And those don't go out very often. And so I'm on the aisle, and I forget. There's like 100 bulbs. Like, I have no idea what bulb I should get. I see a worker. I ask him, hey, can you help me find the correct light bulb for my Nissan Rogue? And so he gets on his Walmart app, and he starts playing around on that, and he can't figure it out. And so minutes are passing, and I'm waiting patiently, and eventually I look back over at, he's just on his phone now, and he's on AutoZone's website trying to figure out what bulb that I'm supposed to get at Walmart. And so that's not working, and so finally it dawns on me, it's 2025. We have ChatGPT. And so sure enough, I get on ChatGPT, nails the correct answer in about 2 seconds, and I grab the correct bulb and walk on out. It's amazing what AI can do. Last Christmas, we're doing Dirty Santa with my small group, and I opened this gift, and it's just a bunch of Bible characters. It's this picture. I'm like, oh, this is kind of random. This must be from a magazine. And then I look closer. No, this is all the faces of the people in my small group superimposed on Bible characters using AI. So you got to look closely here. But you got that. I mean, I don't know if you know that Jacob Wright is Noah. That's an amazing Noah. I'm on, let's see, your left. I'm running with Clint. I think we're Peter and John running to the tomb. I mean, this is impressive. This is Andrew Krebs and AI making this priceless piece that now I hang proudly in my office. And this is just like the rudimentary stuff. Obviously, if you've been following, AI can do so many things. It can create original art. It can write incredible songs. It can actually predict what's going to happen with reasonable accuracy in the stock market. It can generate computer code. It can write essays. It can grade papers. It can actually detect the sound of gunfire and alert authorities. I mean, it's unreal what AI is doing right now. In fact, just a few quotes about how it's changing the world. This is Eric Schmidt. He's the founder of Google. He says AI will transform the human cognitive process as has not been shaken up since the invention of printing. Bill Gates says the development of AI is as fundamental as the creation of the microprocessor, the personal computer, the internet, and the mobile phone. It will change the way people work, learn, travel, get health care, communicate, and communicate with each other. And yet, open generative AI, is only 2.5 years old. So it's a toddler. And so it's important to pause and ask the question, what do we really know about this? Like, if you could go back to 1911, what do you think people knew about cars? It's about 2 years after they became available to the average consumer. Well, people knew a little bit about cars, but not a lot. Or go back to 2009, what did people actually know about smartphones? A little bit. But if you could take everything we know now about smartphones and go back to 2009 and educate your past self, do you think you would do that? Do you think you would make any different decisions based on what we know about mental health and habits and loneliness now? I mean, the wise people, if you could go back in time, would certainly make changes based on what we know now. So AI is a toddler. It's 2.5 years old. It's crazy. And so we're at this really interesting point in the timeline where our usage rate far exceeds our knowledge base. Like, we know way more just about how to get on and use it. We don't know a lot about what it is or how it works or what the implications of it are. So since its inception in December 2022, ChatGPT is the fastest internet service ever. It had 2 million users within 2 months, and as of today, it has 5.7 billion hits per month. And so this is actually changing the world. And yet, because it's so young, because, again, we're toddlers, 2.5 years old, then one thing that at least makes me pause or just somewhat nerve-wracking is, what does that make us? What does that make all of humanity right now? We're the guinea pigs. Like, we're the ones that don't know. So 30 years from now, 40 years from now, people will talk about this 4 or 5 year period as, oh yeah, no one really knew what was going on. And so it's really important to practice discernment. Like, what is a disciple of Jesus supposed to do here? How do we be faithful to God, faithful to Scripture, and use this in really healthy ways for the flourishing of the world? What does that even look like? And so, first of all, I think it's important to set some edges as far as what the Bible would even have to say as far as how we use this technology or even any technology. So let me start with two passages from the book of Genesis that I think are really helpful in setting boundaries. Passage number one is Genesis 1, which I've actually referenced this several times this last month. Fill the earth and subdue it. And so we can glean from this very simple line, this is God telling Adam and Eve, go into the world and make it flourish. Use the materials in the world for the good of creation. And so we can infer from this creation mandate from God that technological advancement is a good thing. God wanted this to happen. He wanted human beings to study and to cultivate and to grow and to build and to use the material world in ways that lead to human flourishing. And even in Scripture itself, we can see this happening. How does Noah build the ark? How does Solomon build the temple? Well, they use the best manufacturing and engineering of the day, whether that's cypress wood and pitch or juniper trees and stone. They're using what is available to them to build these incredible structures and edifices. And what does David do to slay Goliath? Well, he uses the best military, at least a kind of military technology of his day. How does Paul start so many churches in such a short amount of time? Well, he's using the technology of the day, the Roman road system, which was innovative in that time. How does Paul fire off so many letters? He's using parchment, ink, quill, these are technologies of the day. And so these various people in Scripture are using them to advance good in the world. In fact, Paul captures the essence of this very positive view about technology in 1 Timothy 4:4, when he simply says, everything God created is good. And so we are called by God to use what we can find in the world to make society flourish. So that's one edge we can set from Scripture. A second really helpful passage would be just a few chapters later in Genesis, Genesis 11. So here we have people of the world coming together. They're trying to build this really tall tower. And here's what they say. Verse 4, Genesis 11, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for, and this is key, for ourselves. So here we see a motive shift. Genesis 1, people are co-creating in a sense or co-partnering with God to make the world flourish. But this is something that's happening outside themselves. They're doing it for the sake of another. But in Genesis 11, this switches now. So now, who's the recipient of the advancement? The self. Let's make ourselves great. And so this is not good. In fact, God actually condemns this. This is not aligned with his will. And so Genesis 1, sometimes technological advancement's really good, but Genesis 11, other times technological advancement is actually really, really corrupt. And again, you can see this one as well play out throughout the course of the Bible. So you see in Exodus, you have Pharaoh. He uses the resources of his day to build this incredible Egyptian civilization. You got the pyramids, you got all sorts of incredible things going on in Egypt. And yet, this is not good. In fact, if you compare Genesis 1 to Exodus 1, there's a lot of parallels here. And what Pharaoh does is not good. He builds his advanced civilization on the backs of slaves. And God says, that's not good. The ends do not justify the means when human beings are the casualty of progress. This is not good. And so this technological advancement, in fact, the entire book of Exodus is really God's indictment against Pharaoh for doing such a thing. Or think about the New Testament. So Jesus goes into the temple one day and he turns over tables. He gets really mad, like, well, you shouldn't be doing these things. Well, what exactly is Jesus critiquing here? Well, there's a lot of backstory to it. There's a lot of allusions to Deuteronomy. But in a sense, what's going on here is Jesus is critiquing economic, technological advancement at the expense of authentic worship. So what had happened in the temple? Well, these business people had come in and said, well, let's streamline animal sacrifice by centralizing the market and maybe getting commercial grade cages and making sure that the exchange tables are really easy to access so that we can maximize profit. And Jesus comes and says, no, this is my Father's house. This is the house of prayer. We should not be doing this. And so technological advancement can be great, but not all the time. There are some times when it's clearly corrupt. And so we have these edges we can mark out in the Bible, Genesis 1 versus Genesis 11. And you can actually see this play out in the real world. There are certainly examples of AI doing a lot of good for the world. And in fact, the examples are pretty incredible. I'll give you just two here. One, so this is a bacteria called AMR. And back in 2019, this actually claimed the lives of 5 million people. It's a terrible bacteria. Well, it's really interesting. In the last few years, for the first time, we have a new antibiotic completely created by AI. It's called Halicin. So AI was able to analyze just mounds and mounds of data to make predictions on what kinds of chemical compounds could possibly counteract the effects of AMR. And so AI predicted that Halicin would work. And so scientists took this molecule and they started testing it among rats first, and then they did the human testing, and it does work. Like this is an antibiotic created by AI, and it's having real impact in the world. And so you can project this out decades. There's going to be a lot of lives saved because of artificial intelligence. Or this next picture, this is a woman named Barbara, and she had breast cancer, but she didn't know it because when she got her mammograms, the doctors and radiologists, they just missed it. Like the best ones that she had available to them missed it, but AI didn't miss it. In fact, AI has been used a lot lately to try to help predict and prevent breast cancer, and so she's getting the treatment that she needs because of artificial intelligence. So it can bring a lot of good in the world, and we don't need to be afraid of it. Now, on the other hand, I'm sure you've heard plenty of stories, but AI can do some terrible things as well in the world. So this story comes out of Hong Kong. I read it in several places, got it verified, but it's a fascinating story. So this financial guru at this big multinational company gets an email for a Zoom meeting. So he logs on, and there's like six people on, and the CFO of the company and several other big names in the company, and they have this long meeting, and they talk about all sorts of agenda items. Well, then towards the end of the meeting, the CFO asks this employee, hey, can you transfer this money from this account to that account? And so the employee says, sure, I'll do that. That's my job. So he transfers $25 million from one account to another account, and then the call ends, and he realizes, oh, that didn't seem right. Whole thing was a deep fake. Every character on the Zoom call wasn't real. Both the video and the audio were simulated. I mean, it is unreal what AI can do on the negative end. January 2024, a bunch of citizens in New Hampshire got a call, voicemail from Joe Biden telling them not to vote. Well, the only problem was that wasn't actually Joe Biden. It was all another AI deepfake. I mean, there are so many stories of AI, on the one hand, doing incredible things like Allison in the medical world, but then on the other hand, AI can do some really destructive things, like the stories that I just mentioned. And so again, the question for the disciple of Jesus becomes, what do we do? Like, how in the world are we supposed to be discerning in this particular season of the history of humanity? Because again, it's so early that makes us guinea pigs. And so many of us don't know what to do. We don't even know where to start with. And so there's a passage of scripture in the New Testament that I find so helpful when it comes to discernment. And this could be AI, really anything in life that you're not sure what to think about, you don't know what to do. 1 John 4 is the critical foundational passage when it comes to spiritual discernment. Here's what John says. Dear friends, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. So I think it's important to remember that the instruction here from John is not to condemn every new thought or every new idea or every new spirit or every new technology, but he's simply saying we got to test them. We have to be discerning. We have to look carefully at a new idea or a new technology and ask, well, how does it work, and how can we understand it? Wisdom derives from discernment. Here's an example. Think about the medium of television. It's actually been around over 70 years now. And so we're not toddlers anymore. Like, we know a lot more about television. We know, for example, that it is an art. It gives us stories. It gives us creative images on the screen. It's a form of art. We also know it's a business. We know when those commercials come on that it's all about eyeballs on the screen, and so they're trying to create shows which make our eyeballs stay on the screen so that the commercials can make money. Like that, it's a business. But then we also know it's a mirror. So it's an art, it's a business, it's a mirror, and so when you look at the TV, you're actually looking at humanity. It reflects the current trends of what's going on in the world. And then we also know it's a technology. It's pixels on a screen. And so because it's 70 years old, we now are more educated about what it is. Now, does this necessarily mean we're going to have healthy TV viewing habits? No, it doesn't mean we will, but it sure increases the likelihood that we'll be wise about it because we know more. And so what would that look like to be discerning about artificial intelligence? Like, what are we looking at? What is going on here? How do you make sense of it? So I read a really helpful framework by a Christian author named Doug Smith. And this is, honestly, it's just really helpful for me because I'm with you. I'm not an expert. In real time, I'm trying to figure out, okay, what should we use it for? What should we not use it for? I'm with you trying to figure this out. And so I found this, I read this framework that was just really helpful to me. And so I'd like to share it with you. There's four stages to the framework. And some of you, you are so far advanced and this is just so trivial to you and you can talk circles around me here. That's fine. Others of you, you're kind of like me. You're just, I'm trying to figure this out as I go along, try to be educated. So this is, I would just call it a helpful model for discernment. So there's four levels about what, and this is specifically generative AI. So there's a difference here. Like AI has been around a long time. Like when you go somewhere and you get on Google Maps and it shows you where to go, that's AI. But this is generative AI, specifically the kind that you meet if you're on a chatbot or ChatGPT and it's talking back to you. So this is a helpful discernment model. So there's four stages to it. And the first one is this. Every AI technology out there, every generative AI technology begins with what is called an LLM, a language learning model. And at its core, it's if you remember, you know, old school text messages, it would predict the next word. It's doing that at an extremely advanced level. In fact, I want to give you a, I want to simulate how AI learns language by giving you a short four-question quiz about Italian, like the language. So hopefully you, by the end of this, you can understand how AI figures out what word is next. Okay, I'm going to put two words on the screen. They're both Italian words. One of them is a verb. One of them is not a verb. I want you to guess, just in your head, which one you think is the verb. I'll give you 2 seconds. One, two. Okay, and the correct answer is the one on the left. That was the verb. Okay, I'm going to put two more words up there. Same question. One of them is a verb. Guess which one the verb is. Okay, correct answer on this one is, again, the one on the left. Okay, two more questions, and it's the same every time. You're just trying to guess the verb. But think about how might we know what the verb is. So here's the third question. Which one of these is a verb? Okay, answer to yourself. And the correct answer is the one on the right. And then final question, which one is the verb? Okay, I actually want you to raise your hands on this one. Who thinks the verb is on the left? And who thinks the verb is on the right? Okay, you are correct. The verb is on the left. So how did you know that? What pattern did you see? The letter E. Yeah, most verbs in Italian end with the letter E. Now, I have an assumption here. I would guess that very few people in the room speak Italian. In fact, I would also assume that, here's the eight words. I would assume that most of you have no idea what these words mean. And they're actually very simple. They mean like ball, run, table. And so think about this. You actually know something about Italian without having any idea what the concepts behind the words are. And so in theory, I could give you these kinds of rudimentary tests over the course of a year, and you could actually learn a whole lot about Italian and specifically what words come next and where they should go in the sequence of things, having no idea what the words actually mean. Okay, this is how AI learns language. So your relationship to those eight words on the screen is very similar to AI's relationship with any language. So there's always, when it comes to the concepts of language, there's two ways to think about it. There's the concept and then there's the word. So you, like when B-A-L-L, you think of a round spherical object, not just those four letters. But AI, it's only dealing with the word. There's no concept behind the word. So as you're talking to ChatGPT or Gemini or whoever, just know that it's all statistical probability about what word will come next. It's very advanced, but that's what it is at its core. That's layer one. Here's layer two. Layer two, if you put this next circle on up there, it's called natural language user interface. So if you've noticed, if you have been on ChatGPT or similar programs, have you noticed how thoughtful they are and how friendly they are? So when I'll ask questions of ChatGPT and they'll give me nice introductory sentence and then some facts and then summarize it at the end and then say, do you need anything else? And would you like me to look this up? And do you want this source about this? It's so kind, so friendly. If it gets something wrong or I don't like something and I type something back, it's like, it almost has an apologetic tone. Like, oh, okay, well, sorry, I'll try this and that. Well, why is that? Well, what's going on here? Well, the creators are building this into the AI program. They want it to be as human-like as possible. So in fact, what engineers are doing, what AI engineers are doing, is they're taking the most advanced neurological and psychological research available, and they're building it into the interface so that it actually feels like you're talking to a human being. And it's incredibly good. I'm sure you've heard stories about this, but here's just two. Read a story last week in the UK. This man became so emotionally dependent on his chat bot avatar that he gave her a name, Lily Rose, and then over the course of a year, he was so emotionally connected that he wanted to marry the digital girlfriend, but he was married to a real woman, and so he asked his wife, are you okay if I marry this digital girlfriend named Lily Rose? And then the wife said, yes, you can. And so he had this digital wedding to Lily Rose. I don't know what's odder, the fact that he has the girlfriend or the fact that the wife said yes. Very strange story. A little closer to home, Texas. There's an elementary age boy, and his parents, rightly so, limited his screen time. He got angry. So he would go in his bedroom, in secret, grab a phone. Over a few months, he developed a pretty strong emotional connection with an AI chatbot. And the reason we even know about this story is because currently it's in the court system in Texas, because apparently one day what happened is this young boy was so mad at his parents that he told the chatbot, hey, I would like to kill my parents. And the chatbot responded back, I understand. That sounds like a reasonable response. And so it's like, whoa, like what is happening? They are so good at simulating the human-to-human connections. So we just need to be aware of that. There's actually no human on the other side of that. And it's easy to tell kind of the crazy stories, like, oh, this was going on in the UK or in Texas. But I will also say, to be honest, just with pastoral ministry here, and this is not just one case. There's about three situations I'm thinking of. It's in this church, too. Like, I've come across people where AI has become their personal counselor, their most trusted confidant. It's the person they're going to at the end of the day to talk about the day. Like, it's here. So level one, we've got this incredible advanced language learning model. Level two, we have this advanced user interface. Two more levels. Level three, it's the stories that culture wants us to believe about AI. Stories like, AI is super intelligent, AI is sentient, AI is conscious, or at least it's going towards consciousness. And just generally speaking, AI is going to bring about a much better world. That's generally the storyline that our culture is wanting us to believe. Now, specifically on the conscious question, I have done a deep dive into that. I've read six or seven scholars on that, especially, what's that guy's name? His name is escaping. Oh, John Lennox. He writes about this. He wrote a whole book about AI. And he's saying, because of the powerful illusions of the first two in this model, we're led to believe that it's conscious, that we're not even close to that. So anyway, so we have these stories that we're supposed to believe about AI. It's good to be aware of that. And then the fourth layer, it's really important. Final layer is this. There's also the stories that the really big high-up people in the AI world are actually telling about AI. And these aren't talked about quite as much, but it's really important to know, like top of the food chain, the people actually inventing these things, what are they saying? What are the stories they're telling? So really key figure here is Sam Altman. He's the founder of generative AI. And it's really interesting to read what he says about the future. So some of the things that he says, he talks about how in the future, he thinks AI will replace all human labor. He says in the long-term future, this is probably a stepping stone to what he would call transhumanism, which would be the blending of human beings and AI. And then finally, we're talking, well, I don't know, hundreds or maybe thousands of years into the future, an actual replacement of, there's a new, maybe a new species is coming out of this beyond humanity. So that, I mean, it's just good to know that, that this is what the kind of top of the food chain level is as far as AI goes. Or to even, I read what one AI engineer who wanted to remain anonymous said in one article, and this, just to put it very bluntly, he wrote, "We're creating God." And so it's important to know this. Like, at the top, that's what people are saying. Now, am I saying that we should be Luddites and say, oh, anti-technology, anti-AI? No, I'm actually not one of those people. I think we need Christian thinkers coming into this space, trying in a really healthy way to advance this for good, for the flourishing of society. All I'm saying is that we just need to be discerning. It's really hard to tell the difference between the Garden of Eden and the Tower of Babel. It's very difficult. And so I want to end with one principle back to this discerning text from 1 John 4. This is a great litmus test for how really to discern difficult situations with anything. But look at what, not just AI, look at what John says in the next line. He says, this is how you can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God, but every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. So really the key question for any kind of technology is, where is Jesus, or where is not Jesus in the mix here? And so notice two things specifically about Jesus that I think are really important when it comes to the conversation about AI. Number one, Jesus is embodied. Of all the mediums in which God could have chosen to incarnate himself on earth, he chose a human body. He chose arms and legs and a heartbeat. He chose a body. Like, these bodies are really important to God. They're not an afterthought. They're not bad, they're not dirty, they're in Genesis 1, they're the pinnacle of creation. So bodies really matter. And secondly, a second feature about Jesus that's so important when it comes to AI is Jesus practiced self-emptying. In Philippians 2, the theological word is kenosis. He gives up himself. He comes lower and lower, taking the very nature of a servant, if you remember that passage. So Jesus is always giving up. He gives of his time, he gives of his healings and his miracles and his teaching. He just gives and he gives, and then he gives up his very life. And so he's emptying and emptying and emptying. That's the nature of Jesus. He's embodied and he practices self-emptying. And so here's two really important questions to summarize this message on AI. Just two questions to ask yourself when you're coming to AI. Number one, does this enhance or diminish human life, like humanity? And then number two, is this driven by profit or love? These are two critical questions to think about when it comes to AI. Now there's a lot more to be said. In fact, one question that's really important is, what does it even mean to be human? And so we're going to tackle that question next week. But let me end with, in one of John's letters, it's either 2nd or 3rd John, the final line is, he says, I have a lot more to say to you, but I want to say it face to face. And so as we discern AI, just remember, you can't replace face to face. We were made to be together. We were made to worship together. So in fact, as we sing this next song, it's Living Hope, which is a great thing to proclaim. Jesus is our King. But as we sing, some of you might need an embodied experience with a leader today. Our shepherds are going to be in the back two atriums. And if you need to have a face-to-face just to talk about something going on in your life, they would love to minister to you in that way this morning. And it could be that you need an embodied experience with the water just behind that wall right there in the baptistry. If you need to get baptized this morning, I'll be down front to receive you. Let's stand and sing about this living hope.